Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Film Experience Podcast. This is your host, Murtada. And we are here in the post-Oscar. Is it glow? I don't think so. What do you guys think? I'm here with Nathaniel.
Hello.
And Nick Davis.
Glow or not glow, depending what you're thinking about.
I'm sick, so definitely not a glow for me, although it's not quite post-Oscar malaise, because I'm really happy it's over.
I don't know. There's like a green cloud over the skies.
Green?
Interesting choice of color.
So we want to talk, I guess, about how we feel about the Oscars, or...
Well, let's start with this question. How do you think history will look back on this particular year in terms of, I don't mean specifically the Best Picture winner, but this in terms of an Oscar year, do you have high hopes that this will look like a sort of big, like a turning point when everything went crazy and they didn't know what they were doing, or do you think it's going to get worse next year? Anyone?
I guess I feel like, I mean, maybe this just speaks to overconfidence in our own tastes, but it really does feel like you can point to the winners that will age fantastically well and the ones that will, I mean, I hate to even say age badly because they already suck, you know, like it didn't take any time to see that Skin and Bohemian Rhapsody and Green Book are ridiculous. And, but it also takes no time to see that, like, the gender and racial diversity and the internationalism of the people who won in lots and lots of categories, and for work that it would have been easy in lots of those categories if over somebody else. I think it's, and that those winners were not just representationally, and it's not at all tokenism. Those were the best possible accomplishments in those categories. So, it's just so going to depend whether people are thinking back on Best Picture, where this will always be a Sarlacc pit. Remember that thing?
Yeah.
I think everybody knows Sarlacc pit.
Okay, good.
I think, unfortunately, like even in just this week of coverage, the sort of Best Picture winner has drowned all other conversations, including what you were talking about, Nick. So... usually Best Picture is the year. I mean, do you remember anything about 2005 besides Lost to Crash? Like, yes. Like, you don't go down and say, oh, you know, something was gained here or there. So I think that this is going to be looked at as a year, a terrible year because of Green Book, because that really drowned all conversation, and that's always going to be the thing. And then the other thing is about the Academy itself, like when you look at the last couple of years, this expansion that they did, and some of the winners are great, which some even in Best Picture, well, 2 years ago, for instance, I think this year just proves to us that despite all this change, and it is incremental change, and it is felt in some categories, maybe it's not that much. This is still the same Academy that gave the Oscar to Driving Miss Daisy and then 30 years later gave it to Green Book. Maybe it's probably the same people. So maybe that change is actually not that great. And it hasn't happened yet, and it needs to continue for the changes to be reflected in all categories. Because, yes, they nominated some great people and there were some great winners, but overall, when you are the Academy that votes for that movie as your best of the year, then maybe the change wasn't really that much incremental.
I agree with that, but I do have a concern with the way people talk about the Academy changing and the evolution. You know, 1989 was, what, 30 years ago? So if we take it as fact, which maybe we shouldn't because we don't have all the statistics that, you know, Oscar skews, you know, the average age is like 70 or something like that. The bulk of the Academy is dead that voted for Driving Miss Daisy. But also, I have to say I'm a little nervous about the taste level of the Academy right currently in terms of, you know, everybody acts like this huge expansion of membership has been only a good, but if they're voting for things like Bohemian Rhapsody en masse, then I'm worried. You know, because I don't think you can... but then on the other hand, BAFTA had Bohemian Rhapsody in there. Like, everybody went crazy for that. So maybe it's just a fluke. Maybe this year's a fluke.
Bohemian Rhapsody, did it win a lot at BAFTA besides Best Actor? I don't remember.
No, but it had a lot of nominations, including cinematography, which I know Nick cherishes.
Okay, I didn't hear you. Your sound went out.
I'm a little worried. Like, I'm hoping it's looked back on as a fluke year because it seems the taste level, you know, it had seemed in the past few years that the taste level was rising. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had some really great things like Moonlight and give me something else, guys.
La La Land. I mean, but you can't really blame the taste level on the new members because from the statistics, they are only a tiny number. They're still not a majority. So it's not like suddenly the new members who've been added since Cheryl Boone Isaacs became president are a majority. They're still like, I don't know, around 15% or maybe even less than that. So you can't really blame any choices on the new members. I don't think.
Okay, if we take that as gospel, that means the people giving them credit for, like, Moonlight winning is not true either. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah.
Yes.
I think both can be true, and I think that, like, you know, almost every year, I mean, I take a lot of your points, Furtada, and, like, especially the one about, you know, most people are going to remember an Oscar year based on the Best Picture winner.
Yeah,
like,
it's true.
In a self-selecting group, probably, if I'm like, I know exactly who won sound editing in 2005. Like, you know, I still remember those geisha wins. So, whatever. But, like, I think almost every year, like, is a mix of things that went well and things that, like, really badly didn't, and, like, show the kind of philistinism of much of the Academy, and, like, sort of nationalist defensiveness, but also some signs of progress, of which I do think there have been more lately, but I totally agree there's clearly a silent and not so silent majority. But to me, so much of it is about, like, if you've got 8 films and 6 of them are in different ways, I mean, we would all debate what the number is, but, like, these are all really great options, and so all of the, like, know-nothings are going to gravitate to the other two, which is going to bump up their numbers, like, which is why I went into that night thinking it's going to be one of these two. Let's just get ready. Like, I never thought it was going to be, you know, Roma. And in the same way, I think Moonlight, that Best Picture win can't be any more of a referendum on that year having been a good year than by itself than this picture win being a bad one. It's just always mixed.
That's true, and it's always been mixed. It's always been mixed, even in the 70s and 80s. Like, you'd have great Best Picture one year and a terrible one the next year.
Yeah,
and it's also like what's the 8 that's nominated, right? That always affects it, the ranking. Because like when the year of Moonlight, like, what was the worst one? Hacksaw Ridge, right? Like, that was sort of like the bad one, but there was a lot of good options. And I think this year they just nominated a lot of bad options. And so that also means that you have to choose from there. And maybe, like, for me, if I was a member and I had to rank those 8, I will be like, which is the least objectionable to me? So maybe a lot of people had to deal with that. And that's why we got these bad winners.
We got, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm just feeling a little, I mean, it always requires some time passing to know how, because everything changes with time. Nick, you're right that some of these things already seem like bad options, but you never do know what time is going to do to things. Like, we're not going to know exactly for a while how people are going to view some of these movies.
I mean, I appreciate the wisdom of that, but I also have a really hard time believing that the ones that are stink, like these particular stink bombs, like there have been some in the past, but it's still worth debating. But it's maybe I'm just a symptom of what you're talking about, but I think I'm with Murtada. The Green Book is never going to smell any better than it does right now. And Bohemian Rhapsody and same. And maybe nobody will ever sneeze skin again. Maybe that'll just stop. So it doesn't matter. We'll forget how terrible.
Maybe what?
Maybe nobody will ever see Skin again, that live-action short film that, like, that one that was also such a, like, shit-the-bed option. But that can just be lost to history, maybe.
Well, except for that he made a feature of the exact same name that's coming out this year. Starring Jamie Bell instead of Jonathan Tucker, I guess.
But I think the story is a little different, but probably just as bad. I mean, I haven't seen it, but I heard that, and I trust
Nick. Toronto, wasn't it? Oh.
What's that?
It played in Toronto, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't expect those things. Okay.
Yeah, well, no, it's the same guy, same title, but apparently different story or something.
Okay. Oh, whatever.
But it does have a couple of the same actors, I believe. Like, I know Danielle McDonald's in both of them.
Sweetie.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, moving on. Let's lose it to history.
That is becoming, something that's happening to the short categories more often now, it seems, where people are using shorts as like a sort of demo of a hopeful feature. Whereas people used to use the shorts, I think, as calling card to hire me as a director. And now they seem to be like, let me expand this into a feature.
Well, I think in a lot of cases, it's the only way to get funding, that people want to see a demonstration of, like, how's this going to work?
Yeah.
Because nobody has the imagination to go on the idea anymore.
So how do we think the acting wins are going to age?
I think Olivia's will age very well.
Yeah.
Because it's a great performance, and she's an actor who this is going to be sort of like the start of her Oscar journey. So that one will definitely age very well. I don't know about the rest. I think Regina's will probably age well too, because that is a movie that, even though Beale Street, and obviously I'm biased because I love it, but it's a movie that people are going to watch and in 10 years are going to be like, wow, that got only 3 nominations, and it will always be in discussion.
Agreed. I'm curious what the afterlife of Mahershala Ali's discourse about Green Book and even his own win for it will be as time goes on, and is not, I mean, he seems like somebody who's, I mean, he seems like a really thoughtful, tactful person, so like I don't think there's going to be some unveiling of all kinds of stuff like just full on that we haven't been hearing now, but once the obligation to promote the movie has passed, you know, I'm just thinking about that interview Viola Davis did as part of the Widows Tour this year, where she suggested that, like, I did feel like the conception of Abilene and the structure around the film was really racist and quite limiting. And all the flack she caught 7 years after making the film. But she said it anyway, and I'm kind of curious what we'll get from Mahershala. And I think that win may be remembered partially in dialogue with the palpable friction among the people who made that movie that only became more palpable as it went on.
I hope that that doesn't happen personally, only because I was already upset that everybody decided that he was so far above the competition that he should have every win. So I don't want to have yet another reason to be frustrated that Richard E. Grant didn't win. So I don't want Mahershala to disown that movie, because then that will make me even madder about the how the season went down. If that makes sense.
Feel better if he loves the movie.
Well, why give him an Oscar for it? He already had an Oscar. I'm so confused about the way that whole category went down to begin with, that I don't want another reason to be really angry and frustrated with the season.
Mm-hmm.
Because Richard E. Grant is such a classic option of somebody that you would hand an Oscar to when they knocked it out of the park after, 30 years of a career, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I hear what you're saying, but, to me, one of the most interesting things that happened, I mean, it's not a performance I would have wanted to nominate with an Oscar, but I did feel like, to an extent, I felt it about both actors, but especially him. Like, I did watch them trying to problem solve a really horrible script. And watching somebody have to publicly navigate recognition that seemed to, I mean, the whole team seemed kind of shocked by how that film got embraced from Toronto afterward, and it resonated really differently for different people. Like, some of those a-holes seemed overjoyed about the recognition they were getting. And I think we learned something about the industry and about racism in the industry to watch somebody have to promote work that they probably don't 100% believe in, and then are being given more and more reasons to have complicated affects. So I think I'm learning more from his win than I would from a better performance winning. Sorry, Martella.
No. I just wanted to say something. This is not about Mahershala, but it's about Green Book itself. Like, I don't think anybody in this movie, any creative force behind this movie, the writers, the directors, actually believe in equality or see black people as their equals. They only deign to see them as others they're allowing to live in their world. And this is what I find out from the movie. And that's why it was so offensive to me, because it othered this black character. He's there only as a device for the white guy to be seen as more human. And I think this is why Mahershala went supporting. The movie wasn't interested in his character. It was only interested in Tony Lip and making him more human. So even though you could say he has a lot of screen time, it doesn't matter. This movie is not interested in him. So, and I'm sure he saw that. So I would be interested actually in hearing from him right now after he stopped promoting this movie. Because it's the same thing that Viola talked about with The Help.
I hear what you're saying, but I think when actors publicly diss projects that are viewed as helping their career, it's usually not a good look for them in one way or another. Often within the industry, I think about Katherine Heigl, for instance, who said that, you know, she thought her material was below par for Grey's Anatomy. And she got basically her career, she was, or no, and saying Knocked Up was a little bit sexist. She basically lost her career because she was seen as ungrateful about all these opportunities that she'd had. And I just worry when actors, I know it's a tricky thing for actors to navigate, but I worry when they're willing to diss things that A, paid them a lot of money, B, gave them a lot more fame, and C, gave them awards, you know.
But are you saying that that's the reason that you're worried that you don't want there to be negative repercussions on an actor you admire? Or are you saying that you think he or somebody else in this position should not?
No, I'm just saying I have seen in the past that it never, I don't think I've seen an example, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think I've seen an example where it didn't damage an actor to do that.
I mean, yeah, probably, but I guess...
So I'm saying I don't want that for Mahershala is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, we're all here speculating. He might never say anything. I just think that, you know, I was thinking that this is sort of a postmortem discussion that would be interesting for me personally to hear. And I think, so it's not that he's going to do that, because he has been very smart in how he navigated this whole thing while sort of keeping his line thorough without being involved in all the crazy shit that's happening around him with this movie, but also maintaining his maintaining, promoting the movie and talking positively about it and his performance, but also never acknowledging all the shit that's happening as with any, in any positive way. So he's a smart person and he'll continue to be a smart person, I think. And if he wants to discuss it, if he wants to discuss what I was talking about and what Nick was talking about, I hope he does.
I just wonder what the timeline is, because I guess the reason I was thinking about the Viola Davis example is I would have thought 7 years was long enough, and so much has happened in her career with everybody that you could say something now and not get like, why is she so ungrateful? But it turned out 7 years was not long enough for people to not hit her with that. And I do think Mahershala Ali has a whole bunch of goodwill and admiration from the industry at large, that it did not strike me that Katherine Heigl was necessarily speaking from the platform like that, even though I think she was totally right and was also treated pretty unconscionably. But and even she was not in the position that he was in of being expected to be the sort of ambassador from a mostly white creative team about a film that I agree does not care about black people, but that he and Octavia Spencer were sort of expected to carry the load for a film that didn't really care. So, like, his position, I think, was way even more complicated and not necessarily something he invited when being interested in the character he was going to play in the script. And I totally take the point that we don't know what he actually thinks and that we're all speculating. But but I felt like it was his allegiance to Don Shirley more than his allegiance to the film, although it's also clear people, as we learned from Paul Schrader as well this week, that people's discourse about the movies they're involved with are highly controlled during these campaigns. So whenever it happens, I will want to hear what he has to say.
Yeah, and the same thing about Rami Malek too. Like, I would want to, I'm sure he has like ironclad contract in how he talks about this movie and what happened on set. They all do that. They all have these contracts. So maybe, I don't know, in 5 years, Rami Malek will be actually able to tell us what happened, because he, I don't think people say he didn't say this and he didn't say that, and he didn't. Totally didn't acknowledge anything, avoided any mentions, but maybe there was something there that prevented him from doing that. We don't know. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. And I hope if there was, then maybe we will hear from him.
Yeah. Wow. Again, I didn't expect to be so far on the other side from you guys. I don't want to hear one more word from Rami Malek about that movie. I think he's behaved badly. Lying through his teeth, obviously, about not knowing what he was getting into with Bryan Singer. I mean, the reason I don't want actors like speaking out against movies that got them all this huge, huge career boost is it does come across as ungrateful. Like, so you're going to campaign to get all this statues and like you're just going to go out of your way and become more and more and more famous, and then you're going to bite the hand that feeds you. Like,
I guess, but it's also like, it's hard for me not to think, I mean, how much of Hollywood's hand is really feeding an actor like Mahershala Ali or even Rami Malek? I mean, I don't not have the reservations that you have about what's the right thing to say at the right time. There's a lot to talk about in all those situations, but particularly, I mean, I don't want to romanticize or speak even further away from like what I could possibly know anything about, but these are not actors who have infinite choices about how to work or how many projects are being offered to them. And like the ability for them to be in more projects later in which they might more unambivalently, they might believe in even more, both tremendously on their willingness to be part of the promotional team. I mean, look what happened to Monique. If you say there are problems, boom. They're not exact parallel situations, but I guess I would agree with you that if you're saying that you feel like Rami Malek handled the pressures of this complicated situation even worse than you feel like Mahershala Ali did, like I agree.
Listen, I don't think Mahershala Ali handled this badly. Don't misread me. I totally agree with you guys that he handled this situation the best he possibly could. I'm just saying I've seen what happens to actors like Katherine Heigl or whatever who admit that a project that gave them lots of money and lots of fame was maybe an issue or offensive in some way, and people attack. So, like, why? I don't know. I'm uncomfortable by it. But the Rami Malek thing is completely different because I think he handled it poorly. And also, he manipulated the situation, and I'm sure the PR helped, to come across as this, like,
savior of the movie.
Yeah. Which is, any more dissing he would do of the movie would be more self-aggrandizing. I do not want to hear one word from him, is what I'm saying.
That's coming through.
Yeah, I mean, if we don't hear about Bohemian Rhapsody at all, that would be fantastic. Can we just forget it ever happened?
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't want to be misunderstood here. I think Mahershala handled this all very beautifully.
Yeah, and you were clear about that before. I phrased that in a way that may have sounded like I didn't get that, but that's what I'm hearing. But
yeah.
I guess I feel like the two wins that among the acting categories that are already the easiest to embrace, and not just easier to embrace, they're great wins. It's funny that the two that I think will be actually most interesting and informative to, like, keep unpacking later are the two that are disheartening.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, Best Actor has been, like, terrible. Like, I mean, in the last decade, like, Daniel Day-Lewis is a great performance, and I really think that Leo deserved an Oscar for his career, not exactly for The Revenant, but those are the only two I would sign off on. So Best Actor is just terrible.
I would have been happy to hand Leo a watch for his 20th year in the career. You know,
right.
Way to go on acting. But... yeah, well, plus Best Actor, they always nominate male actors, which sucks.
Right? They should have just given us 10 actresses.
About structural problems in the Academy, that's one. Why are all these men nominated all the time?
Yeah, really, we could have filled up Best Actress twice over and just skipped Best Actor this year.
Could have filled up Best Actress four times over and just... You know. I stuffed the shit out of it, but fine. But
you know, people are always fighting for, or not people always, some people like want genderless categories. I do not, because I know what would happen. Rami Malek would have beat Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
So do we want to talk about the ceremony itself, like some things that we liked? I think we know what we didn't like.
The thing that's most interesting to me from a, like, let's discuss perspective is the new thing of not having a host. Like, did you guys miss it in any way? Because I did in a way that surprised me.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I didn't at all. So tell us, what did you miss?
I did not miss what... it makes the ceremony much longer, even though I love a long ceremony. I did not miss all the jokes and all the elaborate setups for long jokes. I did not miss that even for a split second. I did miss the sort of, and this is what surprised me, that I didn't realize that the host made me feel like I had a guide through the evening. Even when they disappeared, there's like an emotional through line or something, which... I felt completely missing, so I felt kind of detached a little bit this year.
Oh.
But that surprised me. I had no idea that I would feel that way.
I think I've always felt like I didn't care about necessarily having a host.
Yeah.
Some of the Golden Globes and stuff, like that was the change that I didn't care about. I thought it was embarrassing that they can't get a host because of the reasons they can't get one, and that... they've made the role totally toxic, but and in a way, I even felt like I wasn't sure I even needed Amy and Maya and Tina to come out and try to make us feel better about that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually loved the Amy, Tina, Maya thing, and it sort of settled in. They set it up and left, and I thought that was all we needed. And the rest of it just passed. We just needed to get to that finale. I actually enjoyed it more than I usually do. But I have to say, the ceremony itself, the speeches, you know, just a few here and there, you know, Ruth Carter, Regina King, Olivia Colman, maybe, the speeches were mostly so boring. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody said anything interesting, you know, apart from Spike Lee, of course. Nobody said anything interesting or political or, you know, linked it to anything that's happening in the world or gave us any moment to talk about the next day. Like, just people, the winners really failed at their speeches, I have to say. Like, even, apart from the four I mentioned.
Well,
all of,
but even Spike Lee, like, I was so excited to hear him talk. And I was having a hard time getting the message because he was not completing sentences. Like, there was something going on with his cue cards or something where it didn't feel like, I was like, wait, what are you saying? Because, like, the way he delivered it was so bad that I sort of lost the impact that I think it would have had. You guys didn't get that at all.
No, I agree. I thought that was, like, I kind of agree with both of you, not just to be a jerk. Like, I thought it was a pretty powerful moment, and I also think he assumed they were going to give him a lot more time. And it looked like there was a lot more written down there that I don't think Duke was meant to be the end of that speech by any means. I don't even think the other three people weren't going to get to talk if he kept going, which is a kind of Spike Lee mistake to make. But and yeah, I agree that he read it in a kind of halting way. But I also thought I did like what he said a lot, and I loved his role in the whole evening. I just loved.
Like, oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
Like, the Barbara BBF thing, what was that? Like, that was so great. The, like, jumping in Sam Jackson's arms, the, like, jumping out of the seat when Green Book won. Like, I was here for all of that. But
and the big fist pump when Ruth Carter won. Like, that was great.
But I agree that the speech felt in some ways like a miscalculation, even though the moment itself was so gratifying.
Yeah, I was... But, I've loved him forever, so I was very excited. I was having to concentrate really hard to understand what he was saying because he kept, like, doing the staccato, stopping in the middle of sentences things. I was like, what's happening?
Also, his win came right after Green Book won, and that's when I started drinking really hard, so I don't think I paid that much attention. I had to read the transcript in the New York Times the next day, and that was very clear that it was a great speech.
You just turned into Mary Tyrone, dragging your wedding dress around your apartment.
Yes. Because that's when I knew that Green Book was winning Best Picture.
I mean, I'll say, too, that, like, in spirit, I'm mostly with you that the speeches, even as a total speech queen, didn't feel like this was a banner year across the board, really. But there were a few more than the ones you mentioned that I liked. Like, I really liked Hannah Beekler's confessions about how demoralizing it had been to be in this business and what it felt like to get that creative investment from Ryan Coogler, who just consistently came off in speech after speech just, like, a completely lovely person to work with. And the period end of sentence speech I thought was great.
Yeah, I liked that one too.
But yeah, and even like the most obviously awful one, which was the Vice makeup one, is like so fascinatingly terrible that it brought up some rewatching. That could be a drinking game. I mean, holy shit.
That was so crazy.
Yeah.
Turned the lights off on them. Like,
they shut off the air conditioning.
Yeah, that one, it was so confusing. Wait, you actually rehearsed it to each do one word and pass off after a word? Like, what was happening?
And that the guy clearly, like, Greg Canham was never into that plan. He was like, I fucking memorized it anyway, Queens. What the? No, I already said that. Oh, you said that? You should say this now. Why don't you just say it? What is wrong with everybody?
And or why? It was just bizarre. And he's won four times, so it's like, he would have practice by now. I just had a random gripe. Why couldn't the actors present the acting categories like they always have? Because they made the stink about them not being famous enough, but across the board, they weren't more famous than Frances McDormand and Gary Oldman. I was like, there was a lot of people less famous than them presenting Sunday, that was strange to me.
Yeah, my only thing is that they maybe wanted to present one of the big awards first, and they wanted Maya, Tina, and Amy to do it, but they could have presented, I don't know, animated picture or something.
Mm-hmm. I also thought there was a, I think the uniform whiteness of those four winners was not maybe on brand with what the show was trying to present, because there was such a self-conscious showcasing of what I'm sure they thought of as an inclusive presenter list,
mm-hmm.
Especially early on. And also a weird sense that maybe we just can't wait to see the stars of Three Billboards reunited again. It's like, nobody cares. Like, even people who like that movie more than I did. That doesn't matter.
Like, but you guys, I have to hand it to Frances McDormand, who had no emotion whatsoever in her voice when she read Olivia Colman, when if anybody had opened that envelope and saw that name, like, this is the biggest surprise of the century. Like, completely no emotion, you know. Kudos to her.
Yeah. Frances McDormand's a treasure. Are we going to talk more about Olivia?
Of course.
I mean, I feel like I said everything I had to say about this in that article about Olivia, or about Glenn. I love Olivia Colman, and I totally get that that win is going to look great in history, but it's still not a great look that Glenn Close doesn't have an Oscar.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating to me. Like, if we could have had another tie, it's been 51 years, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the first day or the first hours after that happened, it was, all my emotions were about Glenn and how bad I felt for her and all of that. But I have to say, now I'm really, really happy for Olivia, and I think it's a fantastic win. And, you know, to your point, it's a win that will stand the test of time, but also just, it was a happy moment in that ceremony, to get that surprise, to get that speech, to get this performance that I really loved actually win. So it's great.
I will say one thing that helped me calm down in the days since is seeing that Glenn Close actually changed clothes and went to the after parties.
Oh, yeah.
So she is a good sport.
Totally good sport. Did you listen to her interviews?
No.
I think Vanity Fair talked to her. I think that's who it was, but where she was just saying, I mean, I can't say I agree with the sentiment being expressed sometimes. I'm not dogging out the comment fields, right? But I do not think that this is evidence that the Academy does not like Glenn Close. They have no idea how close it was, and there were different reasons to be voting for different performances, but she was saying quite the opposite, that like this season has just been such a complete, like, months of kindness and adulation and generosity from her colleagues, and like, and that's what she's taking away from this season. And she seemed totally earnest about it. And I feel like the person that we got to know in her appearances, speeches and publicity and whatever over the past couple months is, mm-hmm. is seemingly a pretty well liked person, you know, it just like hasn't been the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Or I know your article, sometimes it has been the right place and the right time, and it still hasn't happened.
Right.
Fair. Totally fair. But,
Yeah,
I feel bad for her, and also don't feel like she was victimized in any way.
Yeah. I mean, that's really great that, you know, that she said that and that she went to the parties and all of that, because I just thought, you know, right after she lost, I thought of that Bradley Cooper interview with Oprah, where he said, when you lose, people don't talk to you at the after party.
Yeah.
And I was just like, please talk to Glenn tonight. Don't ignore her.
Yeah, see, that's why I was like, oh, I was shocked when I saw that she had changed clothes and gone to the after parties. I was like, oh, wow. Because, you know, some people hightail it out of there if they lose.
Yeah.
And, yeah, some are not good sports about it if they thought they had a chance at winning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm still nursing any grumpiness, which I will now express, and I know this is a platform that you definitely share, Nathaniel, like Matata, I'm not sure, but like the amount of grousing about the wife on principle that happened this whole season, the number of people the day after who were posting like, "Ooh, great, now I don't have to watch the wife," like, fucking watch the wife, you know, or like there was a whole thing that happened in Sundance where, like, a whole bunch of critics, including some I really revere, were all joking about the fact that it was all of their in-flight movie because none of them had seen it before. And it's like, what? Why? Like, you can like it, you can not like it, but it just seemed like a real tantamount admission that a major actor, two major actors, starring in a movie that was actually doing pretty well on that subject. Not already a hook for why this should have been on your list with all the other things you have also seen. So I got to feeling a little defensive.
Yeah, and that's really terrible because actually The Wife was well reviewed when it was released. Like, if you look at it on Metacritic, it has a 77, which is very, very good. And it was well reviewed by almost all the critics who review, who deigned, I guess, to see it. Yeah, I totally agree with that sentiment.
And I do feel like this is all so speculative, but we've seen from nominations ever since they expanded the field that more and more of them in all categories are going to the movies that are also up for Best Picture, I think suggesting that more and more Academy members are watching a smaller number of films and that Best Picture winners are consistently doing the best in other categories when everybody gets together to vote. I'm not convinced everybody made it to The Wife. I'm not saying she would have won if they had, but I don't think that, not that I think critical discourse is actually so important to how the Academy votes. I don't think they really listen to it that much, but if they had, constantly sending the message that this film was trivial and maybe not worth your time and only a placeholder for a career award was not helpful and came from some of the very people who were espousing that they felt bad for her for losing. So maybe we could check the sexism of dismissing a vehicle like that, or thinking you have to have a reason to have to watch it. You can hate it if you want, but that sat badly with me.
And the ageism.
Yeah. And the ageism.
Yeah.
Because one of those two reasons, there's some reason you were dismissing it out of hand. And those are the two most likely reasons.
For sure.
And the, like, anti-auteurism of, like, you know, who's Bjorn Runge? You know, like, there are a lot of, what am I doing watching a movie by somebody I've never heard of? I feel it was a weird storm of stuff, but it just felt like such a whipping post. I didn't get it.
Well, and even that I can't buy because critics see things by people they've never heard of all the time. Like at festivals, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot there that didn't really, you know, show people who are doing it in very good light.
Yeah.
So who did you... I have a question for you guys.
Thank you, because I'm a little under the weather. Sorry, I'm not more spirited.
Which presenter did you love? Like, we talked about Frances McDormand, no emotion. But which presenter showed a little emotion when they announced the name and you really loved it? Is there a moment that you enjoyed there?
I mean, Samuel L. Jackson, of course. That was heaven.
Yes. That's what I'm thinking off to, but also Maya Rudolph when she read Regina King's name. There was a lot of infliction and emotion in her voice when she read that name.
Who was it who tweeted that? Was it Guy Lodge who said, like, you know how much Julia Roberts was furious that Green Book won because she didn't even try to make the moment about herself, which she always does when she's happy. I love that gal for it, but that she had to do that, that Danai Gurira had to give sound awards that could easily have gone to Black Panther away to fucking the unnamed. There were some winners whose restraint I admired. And of course the Melissa McCarthy, Brian Tyree Henry. So awesome.
That was great. But did you hear that Ariane Phillips, the costume designer, went on Facebook and said that they disrespected the costume designers by wearing those clothes? Which I was like, that is a crazy opinion.
Your girl, Ariane Phillips.
Oh, man. Ariane, I have a sense of humor.
I mean, they were so in love with the whole thing. Like, it to me, it showed so much respect.
It did, because they made it about the costume design since they weren't going to give them fucking clips or a presentation.
Yeah.
And also my favorite bit from that, like, the whole thing is great, but, like, when she takes her hat off and she has Margot Robbie's hair from Mary Queen of Scots.
Yeah, that was great. The whole thing was great, and I loved the costumes because I was looking to notice all the different costumes that were mixed up in these costumes.
And I read two articles in major papers that said Melissa McCarthy and Brian Tyree Henry came out and spoofed the costumes of The Favorite. That's not the only thing. What did you see when you saw The Favorite? Like,
they could only see the rabbits.
They could only see the rabbits. But yeah, I love that. And like, if you're going to get worried about disrespecting, maybe you don't need like, Awkwafina and John Mulaney, like cracking jokes about how this is a good category. No, this is a really important one. Yeah. No, we love it. But you know, whatever, who cares? I know I'm conscious of our time, and I don't know if there's more we want to say about this, but I think I'm also supposed to ask you guys about Greta, which is
the little palate cleanser after the Oscars.
Yeah.
Something that will never come anywhere near Oscars.
And something that I will probably come nowhere near, because on principle, I am not going to watch a movie where Isabelle Huppert has to be obsessed with Chloe Grace Moretz. Like, fuck
yeah.
That as a premise. But yeah, if you want to go for it.
You can skip it completely. I don't even think there's that much to say about it. There's a couple of moments of Isabelle dancing, I guess. Find that clip, and that's all you need.
No, Isabelle has some good moments. Come on. It's just, as Murtada remarked to me when we were leaving the theater, did Neil Jordan forget how to make movies?
Well, and when did he forget? Because it might be a while ago.
The 90s, apparently.
Yeah, he used to make some good ones.
I mean, can you imagine releasing a movie from the director of In Dreams and The Brave One? Comes. No. Not cutting it.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it had some good moments, but it was one of the worst-paced movies I've ever seen. Like, literally ever.
Yeah, it felt like 4 hours long, even though it was an hour and a half.
And it could have been one of these old school like movies from like the 50s or whatever that's like 65 minutes long, and it would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't that actual much story, you know.
Yeah, I saw the trailer and I thought I got it. That was like 3 minutes.
But Isabelle has some fun moments.
Yeah, and there is a meta joke that's funny. I guess we can spoil it because she's not French, but there's a joke where she's like, she's faux French. So there's a joke like she's always pretending to be French, yes. Which was so funny because she's so French.
Yeah. Yeah. The character is not a spoiler. The character is not actually French.
So what is Chloe Grace Moretz pretending to be? I wonder.
A fine dining waitress.
I'll stop from putting more negative energy out into the world.
I will say this, having once spent a great deal of time working in the hospitality industry, that she did move through the restaurant like a server does in high-class restaurants.
So I know that totally earnest, but I'm just hearing gowns, beautiful gowns. She walked like a waitress.
I mean, she had the body language down, is what I'm saying.
Awesome.
Gowns. Beautiful gowns.
I don't know why. I'm so tickled by this.
Yeah. I mean, why did Isabelle Huppert choose this movie to, like, make in America? Also, like...
I mean, it's kind of great in a way, if the movie had been good, because it's, like, very sort of, like, lowbrow. And... If anybody even knows who she is, even vaguely, the mainstream America, they would think of her as like this, this highbrow, you know, actress, famous French actress, you know. So in that way, it was kind of a fun choice if the movie had been good.
Yeah. One thing that really bothered me, which during the movie, is that the sixth train didn't look like the sixth train. And, you know, that's my train. And I was like, what's wrong with this sixth train? And I never could pinpoint what was wrong with it. And then I went and read that the movie was shot in Dublin. So this wasn't even New York.
This is my favorite review this movie could possibly have elicited. In the plus column, she buttons her waitress outfit all the way to the top, which is on point and realistic. On the negative, that's not the six train. Said Annie Wilkes.
Yeah.
So a real endorsement, Film Experience Podcast, 100%.
Well, Chris, I should mention, we did have a review up and Chris really liked it. So we have a split opinion of this.
Seeds of discord. A house divided cannot stand. What are you going to do?
Well, you know, if you enjoyed it, all those people who enjoyed it, including Chris, you know, they had a good time. So that's an endorsement. It's a positive.
I will say that Chloe Moretz has now become the new Nicolas Cage in my head. Not in any way what you think of when you think of Nicolas Cage. Nick's expression right now is hilarious. In that, for a good long while, every single one of my favorite actresses was working with Nick Cage. And I was like, is he going to co-star with every actress I love so that I have to see him, even though I'm not a fan of his? And Chloe Moretz now, Juliette Binoche, Julianne Moore, Isabel Huppert. I mean, she's racking up the great actresses as co-stars.
You can't fault the girl for her taste in projects and collaborators.
Yes. You cannot.
Period.
End of sentence.
So for our closing, I want to ask you guys, let's bring it back to the Oscars for just one final thing. Like, what do we hope from what has happened this year that the Academy takes from this year? You know, it could be about the ceremony. It could be about the nominations. It could be about the winners, whatever it is you want to say, that they would implement going forward, that was a thing that you would like to see again, or that would be in their rules going forward.
Wait, can I repeat this question? I'm not sure I understood.
So what from this year? What did the Academy learn from this year that you would want to see again?
My quick answer is that they absolutely should make it up to Richard E. Grant by letting him co-present with Barbara Streisand next year. Just do it. My long answer, well, it's not that long, but I have read that there is a bit of a movement to, like, why don't the branches get to vote on their own winners in the same way that they pick their own nominations? And we are getting to a point where it's getting embarrassing, some of the things that win from people who truly have no sense of what another craft department might actually be doing. And I'm not sure I'm, like, already convinced, but I'm super interested in having that conversation, because sound editing and film editing for Bohemian Rhapsody just cannot stand. Even if I liked the movie, what the hell? So anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the editing is truly terrible in that movie. And which, you know, you would just watch any clip online and you'll see it's just like such a mess. But also, but I'm not sure that the branches can be trusted either, because they did nominate it.
Yeah, but it's hard for me. Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's nothing we can do to guarantee perfect winners. But I do think a voting body of all editors would have been less likely to rally behind that one. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, I would say I like your idea of Richard E. Grant and Barbara Streisand. That would be amazing. But also, I actually kind of really like the non-host thing. I never want somebody to go out, talk to, like, people in the next room or whatever, the next theater, or all those things that the host did. I don't want 20 minutes of them telling me, oh, wow, we didn't watch L. Never want to hear that again. So if they can bring somebody like, you know, Maya and Amy or Barbara and Richard to start it and set the tone and be nice, and then we can just go, I would love that. I think that's something that they should do.
You know what? I didn't actually hate that it started off with a Queen number. Not because I thought Queen was great or because I like Bohemian Rhapsody, but
Nick is not taking this one.
This needs to be a vodcast, not just a podcast. But anyway, Nick, you're hilarious. So, no, it just, like, the energy of starting it off that way was, to me, as better than a long monologue about, again, we didn't watch Elle, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they started it with Justin Timberlake 2 years ago. So, you know, get one of the nominated songs. Hopefully they will nominate a good song.
Get something up-tempo as your opening production number. Yeah, it's not that complicated, again. And, something they should learn that they did not learn this year. They're getting even worse about it than they used to. The honorary Oscars, did you catch how quick the pan was? They didn't even get to stand and receive applause.
Totally.
I barely glimpsed Cicely Tyson. I was like, wait, and she was gone.
Horrible. Horrible. That was really
so
horrible.
So disrespectful. You can't say their names and have them stand up?
It wasn't even clear if you didn't know who they were. That shot was so short, you wouldn't necessarily have assumed that was it. Like, Derek didn't clock that those were the honorary Oscar recipients. He just thought it was one of the rando, you know, reverses on the audience.
Oh,
it was terrible.
I was pissed. Anyway, that's so disrespectful of Cicely Tyson.
Yeah.
I have one more takeaway, which this is not for the Academy, but this is to the press. If you're covering this this event and there is like another sort of Spike Lee versus Green Book, please stop asking, you know, the person of color about the fucking racist Academy. Like, every fucking question to Spike Lee was about Green Book throughout the whole time he was campaigning and even after he won. Like, ask him about his movie or ask Peter Fowry about Black Klansman. Like, if it was, you know, equal, then that would have been better.
Mm.
So anyway, that was my gripe.
Murtada, because I think we're all dying to know what Peter Farrelly thought of Black Klansman.
Make him squirm on the goddamn hook, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. I would have loved to see a video of him squirming.
Dude. I read an article, and I hate that websites do this increasingly, where they don't actually include a byline on it, so I couldn't figure out who wrote it. Mm-hmm. But somebody described the producers of Green Book, this is so mean, but it was so perfect, on stage at the end, looking like a school of sea lions beached on an unfamiliar shore. I thought that was just the best sentence that I heard the season. So that was the silver lining that I pulled out of, like, these schlubs up here. We made this movie with beauty. Okay. Like, and thank you to Vigo. I mean, yeah, Mahershala, but Vigo. Like, anyway, we don't have to end like this. But don't do that again. That's an answer to your question. Don't vote for Green Book again. Don't feed sea lions.
I think the reason, I hate that I have to come to defense. Why do I do this to myself? I think the reason they thanked Vigo, from my understanding, the optics were terrible. From my understanding, it's because he signed on first, so got funding for the movie. I believe that's totally what happened there. But yeah, it did come across wrong.
I mean, when they never mentioned Don Cherry, the only person who mentioned him was Mahershala. Like, come on. The optics were terrible.
And you know what else is crazy about people, like, mentioning things? And this one actually shocked me. Is Rami didn't really talk about Freddie Mercury. Usually when people win for playing public figures, they try to do this weird thing that I don't actually like, where they make it about, thank you for voting for this person. You know, like, honor the film, honor the man, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But Rami didn't even, it was weird to me.
Especially because he's done it in every other speech.
Yeah.
Like, by the Julia Roberts principle, I feel like maybe he's done it so often that he, you know, when she said, like, I don't know how I lost my mind and forgot to thank Aaron Brockovich, who was, like, looking right at me from the audience, and, like, I do it all the time. So I felt like I had done it, and it turns out I did not. Fuck me. Like, I will extend him that benefit of the doubt. But
so do you think Freddie Mercury was watching him from the audience in apparition form?
I think Freddie Mercury was somewhere up in heaven watching The Favorite and and watching Olivia Colman's speech over and over again like the rest of us who know what's going on.
Yeah.
And is probably wearing some Sandy Powell outfits right now.
Or all of the costume designer outfits at once.
Yes. Oh. I mean, the best thing was the raspberry that Olivia gave when they told her, your time's up. So I think that's what we're doing with this podcast to the Academy and their choices, except maybe for Olivia.
Until next year. Hey, as I have said a couple times, there's been off years before. Nothing to me will ever be as bad as Braveheart. So I survived that year. I survived Crash. Anyway.
Yes.
Another year I'll survive.
Yes. And you know what? Neon just announced they bought that Alfred Woodard movie, Clemency, and that's something bright in the distance to look at. If it happens, if it doesn't happen, it's still a bright point.
And Glenn Close finally announced Sunset Boulevard. I'm watching Nick's face as I say this. He's doing the Frances McDormand thing of showing no emotion whatsoever.
I'm trying simultaneously not to get my hopes up about Alfrey, even though Alfrey 2020 for president, for best actress, for all of it. But also try not to be pedantic and say, so Glenn starts filming in October, right? So that prospect is not rolling around immediately.
No, that's 2020. Yeah. That's a 2020 film year.
I'm happy that she got that movie like financed and cast and everything. Good for her.
I mean, I only talked to her for 2 minutes. My interview with her was 2 minutes long. I never do red carpets, but I did for her. And that's like in that 2 minutes, she managed to mention Sunset Boulevard. So she really wants to do it.
Yeah.
But getting the guy who directed the live Sound of Music and Peter Pan live as your director, I'm not sure that was like a good choice. But, you know, sending good vibes to her.
Yeah. And they can have a good first meeting where they say, let's not do it live. And that sounds hard.
Who knows? Maybe he'll have hidden talents when he's not doing it live.
Yeah. So thank you everyone for listening to this post Oscar podcast, and we will talk to you soon when we've seen movies from 2019. And so thank you to Nick Davis.
Thank you.
And of course, the film experience himself, Nathaniel Rogers.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back probably in 2 weeks. We'll probably take a little post-Oscar break and kick it off again. Because I know Murtada doesn't want to see Captain Marvel, which is next week.
Yeah, we're skipping Captain Marvel, but I'm ready to talk about Gloria Bell. Let's do that one.
Yeah, into it.
Yes.
Okay, 2 weeks' time, Gloria Bell right here on the Film Experience Podcast.
The real Captain Marvel.